The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Going to be looking at the newspapers and what they have to say. We'll start with the Sunday Independent front page today. Ministers flag tough budget ahead after new 30% tariff threat. This talking about that 30% tariff threat from August 1st by Donald Trump, and basically saying if you'd hoped for anything cost of living in the budget, forget about it. It's not going to be happening. Taoiseach in direct provision. Recent push is the off lead there. The government is planning to clamp down on soaring bills of housing asylum seekers in direct provision centres. That's according to the Taoiseach, Simon Harris. Moving to the front page of the Sunday Times, and again, the tariffs getting the lead there. EU leaders urge Trump to revoke 30% tariff threat. Ministers admit rate would be devastating for Ireland, says the Sunday Times. Business Post, unsurprisingly, going with a similar theme. Road to disaster is the headline. Ireland and the EU reel as Trump threatens 30% tariffs. Business leaders fear dire consequences if import charges are imposed by America. And finally, the Mail on Sunday going with a different lead. A killer released early because our jails are full. This is reporting on the fact that dozens of violent criminals have been freed in what they're calling a revolving door crisis, basically the overcrowding in our prisons, and that leading to some people who have been convicted, in some cases on violent crimes, getting out a little bit early. Now, joining me in studio for our Sunday newspaper panel, Valerie Cox, journalist and author, Conor O'Gorman, founder of One in Four, and John Connolly, TD for Galway West. Thanks a million for all coming in, particularly on a sweltering Saturday. I'm not sure it would have been your first choice to be in a studio, but at least it's nice and cool in here. And I have to start, we're going to start with the presidency, because it's all over the papers today. It's everywhere. You can't escape people talking for it. I'm going to give you all the chance, because we've got some very esteemed guests in the studio. Colin, you attempted to run?
God, no. I mean, look, it's an incredibly important role, but I have to say, I think you'd either want to be a bit of a masochist and you'd want to have an incredibly tolerant family if you were ever going to enter a competition like that. No, absolutely not.
Not you. Valerie, you've recent experience of running in electoral campaigns.
Yeah, I had the time of my life. It's okay running for something like this, but the problem is people don't vote for you and then you don't get elected. And also, if you're running an independent, you know, the costs involved. I mean, I ran a campaign for under €5,000. But, you know, if you're running for something like the presidency and you're against party nominees and so on, party candidates, you're going to need an awful lot of money. Mm. And I mean, that's one of the reasons that the parties themselves are so cagey about choosing their candidates, because they don't want to be putting a pile of money and effort behind somebody who doesn't have a hope in hell of being elected. So, I mean, you have all of these number crunchers and they can all be wrong, particularly at this early stage. Mm. Personally, I believe somebody is going to emerge like the great Messiah in the next few months that we haven't even thought about. I mean, you mentioned even there, you were talking about Ivan Yates. Sure, he could be a candidate himself. We don't know.
He'll love that. He will love being tipped for that. John, you're obviously in the same constituency as Catherine Connolly. Are you any relation?
No relation. No, we're no relation, even though our families do come from the same part of the city, but no blood relation. But I've known Catherine, obviously, for some time. We served as members of Galway City Council together. In fact, reading Ian Begley's article in today's Sunday Times brings back some memories of some of the incidents there over the years. But like, one of the things that does concern me is that there is this reluctance of people to come forward to put their name before the electorate to run for president. And it's such an important role. It's such an important constitutional role, but a really, really important ambassadorial role. And we need people of the highest quality to fulfil that role. So it is concerning that there aren't many people who are willing to say, yes, I'd like that, and I'm willing to take the opportunity or the risk of running the campaign to try and succeed.
Particularly within Fianna Fáil. I mean, I know we've had Mary Hanafin, Peter Powers, and talked about maybe Bertie Ahern, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people in your party putting up their hand.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back to the people who have been president from the party, I mean, they've been the most established and significant figures in party history. Sean T. O'Kelly, Eamon de Valera, and, you know, Patrick Hillary was a senior minister. He was a European commissioner and went on to become president. Even when Brian Lenihan ran in 1990, he was the Minister for Foreign Affairs. So it is surprising that, you know, none of our senior ministers at the moment seem to be that keen or interested in running. I believe some of them would be successful if they did run.
Like who?
Well, I believe Micheál would be successful. I believe Jack Chambers would be successful. And I know Jack is very young. I'm not even sure if he meets the age threshold. So I'm not. But look, and others too, maybe that I haven't mentioned. And some of our former members as well. I know Bertie Ahern has been speculated on a lot. But like you would like to think that the people would have the ambition to go forward and to contest the position to fulfill the role.
Jack Chambers, according to Google, is 34, so he doesn't actually.
He doesn't meet the criteria. There you go.
Straight away.
He can't run. Yeah. Well, maybe that's why he hasn't shown.
Maybe that's why he hasn't put the.
But I think part of the reason why there's a reluctance from people to go forward for the role is just the nature of the contest and how it plays out. I mean, if it was about simply doing the job and bringing something to the role, like it is a very important role. We've just had three presidents over the last three presidents have used the role really effectively and had profound impact in the role. So it's something. It's a role you can do something with. It's a role that has enormous significance and can have huge impact. But the contest is hideous. I mean, again, it's fine from the outside when it just looks like a bit of sport. But if you're in the middle of that kind of vicious, it can be devastating. It can destroy people. I mean, we've seen people look at the impact on Adie Roach. Mm. Look at, you know, people step up with all good intention to take on a role and to do an important job. And then the campaign is what it is.
Why do you think it has gone so vicious?
I think it's almost become a bit of a sport. And we take it for granted that it's a vicious and grueling campaign. But it's a vicious and grueling campaign because of how the political system deals with it. So how the parties and indeed candidates and their own teams maybe deal with it as well. But also the role that the media play with it. I mean, we just accept now that this is a really vicious campaign. Maybe we need to be having a conversation about why it's such a vicious campaign. Mm. Yes, it's a role where the personality and the individual and who they are, people are voting for actually a personality more often than party now, as we've seen over the last little while. So we should have a conversation about who the person is, maybe from a values perspective and what they want to do. But the deeply personal attacks that very often happen, I think, are we should be talking about why it's so vicious.
Yeah. Well, we've already had that to some extent, haven't we? With the commentary on the Mairead's MEP expenses. Mm. I mean, they're already slightly.
I think things like that. But now I'm going to contradict myself. I think things like that, though, when it comes to how people conduct themselves in public life and in the discharge of an elected role, for instance, that's reasonable. Those kinds of things are reasonable. And anybody should be able to speak to that. And, you know, if there's a question there, they should be able to answer that question. But when it goes into, you know, personal history or family or that kind of stuff, that becomes very, very destructive.
I think part of the reason could be also that the limited role that the position has in terms of day-to-day governance and day-to-day issues, and they shouldn't really form part of the debate because the president doesn't have input into decisions around that. And maybe with the lack of that, perhaps the media and perhaps commentators look for other aspects to bring into the debate.
Yeah, but if we look at what the last three presidents have done, they have brought values, they have brought principle, they have taken up issues, they have championed issues, they have used the role really intelligently, really effectively, and they have had impact, not in direct executive and not obviously in the making of executive decisions, but they've certainly shaped and influenced public discourse and political debate. So, you know, that I think can and should be.
And they earned the role coming through the campaigns they did.
Yeah.
I suppose that brings a bit of steel as well, and you know, you can deal with things like that. Shows that you can hold a position like that as well.
Mm. Well, if you're an agreed candidate, I mean, you haven't really come through the slings and arrows of the campaign at all. But I liked the piece by Shane Ross in The Independent this morning, where he was saying, look, you know, he has the solution to this. Yeah. And sure, why wouldn't Shane have the solution?
He always had them.
He said a weaker Fianna Fáil could actually gift the Áras to Fine Gael. But his solution is that, and he says it's an easy solution, that Fianna Fáil should wait until the autumn. And at that stage, they might find an opening for somebody like Ahern or Hannafin, because the electorate will be sick and tired of the overexposed duo from Sinn Féin and Fine Gael just slugging it out between them. So what he's suggesting is that Martin might find a like-minded independent, even a non-party member. And the transfers obviously would be vital in that situation. But he thinks that could be the solution. Now, he also suggests Olivia O'Leary as a candidate. And I mean, these names are cropping up and cropping up. And then you kind of think, oh, yeah, you know, maybe that person could actually make it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one how much, particularly in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, announcing too early seems to be a real threat. And I wonder, has Catherine Connolly done that? Has she just announced too early now?
On,
she
becomes the candidate. McGuinness announced in 2011. What do you mean announced too early?
But she hasn't been under that level of scrutiny. She's been off in Europe. She's been an MEP. And with all due respect to our MEPs, the media doesn't really care about
that. Yeah, but I mean, every presidential election since 2011, Mairead McGuinness has been announced as a likely candidate. So, like, it's not as if Raid McGuinness's ambitions for the Oris are new to people. And
but what I mean, no, I take your point there. But what I mean is, August, you can already feel the news agenda tipping down. August is always quiet. There is always a sacrificial minister nearly every single August. I heard Robert Troy on the station talking about it, someone who knows all about it himself from a few years ago. And all of the people, the journalists who aren't on holidays and are a little bit bored will be looking into everything Raid McGuinness has ever done, everything Catherine Connolly has ever done, to put them under that scrutiny. And by waiting, like a Fianna Fáil potential candidate, John, you kind of avoid that and let the two burn their campaigns
well,
out.
Well, I hope Ivan is accurate, you know, in determining the party strategy. And it'd be great to think that we have strategists who are thinking like that, you know, to be honest.
You're doubting your own party strategy?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I'm only getting to know a lot of them. So I am. But look, I do think the party should run a candidate. And I think there would be widespread opinion among our membership across the country that we should run a candidate. And perhaps we are waiting for, or perhaps there may be discussions ongoing at the moment with people that I'm not aware of, akin to Mary McAleese or someone from a senior academic background or a senior judicial background who might be interested in competing on behalf of the party. But I think we should run a candidate and I think we should outline soon how the process of selection the candidate will take place.
Do you think any of the ones who've been mentioned so far, Mary Hannafin, Peter Power, Bertie, could actually win it?
I do, yeah. I certainly...
Well, any of them or specifically?
Well, I think all of them would have a chance. I mean, Peter wouldn't be as well known as either Mary Hannafin or Bertie. Obviously, Bertie would be the best known and obviously being from Dublin gives an advantage as well because the voting population is significantly biased in that direction.
And would you have a problem with his history?
I think there's a lot of his history that we could certainly hurl as being superb on behalf of the state, certainly in terms of the peace agreement in Northern Ireland and the work he put into that and the personal endeavour he put into that is something that we should reflect on very positively as a party.
Then you also get the tribunals, you get the economic crash, you get, you know, the not having a bank account, all of that comes up too.
Well, it does. And I suppose he's had to answer those questions for a long time.
He's had here's the problem. He's had to not answer those questions for a long time because he's never actually really dealt with them. And there's your biggest problem. As much as Fianna Fáil might like to say, a Bertie candidacy would focus on the Good Friday Agreement and that achievement in Northern Ireland, which is huge, It wouldn't. It would focus almost exclusively on all of the issues in relation to the bank account. But questions of corruption.
Pauline has suggested kind of as well, though, that he is a popular candidate. And, you know, I suppose one of the things there, Sean, and we're getting to the point here, is one doesn't know how a campaign would develop or evolve. And we won't really know until we get into it. And there will be, I've no doubt about it, lots in this campaign that'll change the trajectory and direction of the electorate.
I think it would be daft of Fianna Fáil to run Bertie Ahern as a presidential candidate. Two things. First of all, it'll resurface all of that and that becomes the story of Fianna Fáil again. Actually, for the section of the electorate that doesn't even really know that history, we forget how quickly time moves on. And I'm not sure Bertie Ahern has that much public recognition. I know that sounds like a daft thing to say for all of us because some of us are old enough for that definitely to have been our era. But and others are very engaged in the political system. But like people in their 20s and even in their early 30s don't even really know who Bertie Ahern is. Like, you know, my daughter's 26. She doesn't have a clue who Bertie Ahern is.
Mm. Yeah.
But he does remain, he does hold a certain popularity among people of our generation, definitely.
Oh, definitely. There is a popular vote that he would get. And there's a certain sly wink, cheeky chappy sort of a vote that he'd get as well. But there is the other stuff that then becomes relevant for a new generation.
That becomes the story of the presidential campaign. Yeah.
Just briefly, because we're slightly running time on this segment. You mentioned about, or one of you mentioned about the president not having a policy role. With that in mind, Valerie, Mary Lou McDonald didn't rule herself out this week.
No.
Is it a good idea for her to run? Because on the one side, you have the whole right, Sinn Féin could win the presidency. I think she'd have a very good chance of winning it. On the other hand, if you lose, you're suddenly a leader who's lost two general elections, lost the presidency.
Possibly the only reason she might run is because she doesn't see much of a future for herself in the Éireann. I mean, she's a party leader. But I mean, is she ever going to get any further than that? Is she ever going to become Taoiseach? You know, she's probably thinking that herself. This is never going to happen. So maybe I'll have a bash at this. But she's also going to suffer from the same things that Colin was mentioning there about Bertie Ahern, about, you know, transparency, not answering questions. And there's a lot of coverage of that in today's papers that Mary Lou doesn't answer questions and has people turning journalists away and saying, no, no, we're not dealing with that. We're not dealing with that. And there's been that history right along through all her time in politics. Now, I have to say, my husband would love to see her being elected as president because he was her school teacher. But beyond that, I don't think she can use that as a credit. I don't think she will run, actually. I don't think she will. And you'd wonder, would she have the support of all the other left parties as well? I mean, she's not going to have them all. Mm. And I think that's going to worry her, because if she runs for the presidency and doesn't get elected, where is she then? You know, it's like a difficult position.
If it was another Martin McGuinness candidacy where she ran and she did very, very well and wasn't elected, it could be very good for Sinn Féin. It gives a momentum to Sinn Féin. It gives them... So, I mean, I can see that personally, I can't see her running either. I agree with you, Valerie. But I can see how, from the perspective of the party, they might think it would be a good idea that even if she weren't elected, she becomes presidential. She's out there. It could be a big lift for the party.
Well, one doesn't know what the party is thinking. But John Lee, in today's Mail on Sunday, he has referenced one Sinn Féin source saying it would be a means of a dignified exit for her, which is really interesting. And I wonder how widespread that has felt among the party.
Mm, yeah, well, I texted a few people in Sinn Féin when the name was put out there and they sort of said, look, she'd be great as president. We'd prefer to see her as Taoiseach. But there is an element of that, you know, has she taken the party as far as she's gone? On the left column, Catherine Connolly seems to be the unified candidate of one or two parties. I doubt Labour are going to back her because of the history there. Sinn Féin look like they're not going to back her. With a split left, I mean... does that sort of just open the door for Mairead McGuinness?
Well, the suggestion is that Ivana Bacic is positive and supportive, but that elements within the Labour Party would not be. So it remains to be seen whether Ivana is able to convince the party to support her. Mm. And if not, can they bring forward a credible candidate, recognising that, you know, Michael Dee is leaving the Oras as one of the most popular presidents we've had for a very long time. I mean, and actually, when you think about the youth vote, I mean, if Bertie Ahern had the level of recognition amongst young voters that Michael Dee has, and the huge affection that he has amongst young voters, like my daughter's been in Australia for the last couple of years. She contacted me because she misread a story about an event being Michael Dee's last event as president, and she said, I can't believe how emotional I'm feeling about this. Right? So there's that. He has captured that. Yeah. Like the imagination, in a way that we haven't seen a president do it for a very long time indeed, and has really captured that youth vote. Labour, I don't think that have another candidate that they can put forward of that kind of weight or of that kind of significance. So we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately Labour at least expressed or voiced support for her, even if they didn't nominate officially. But it's very clear Catherine's going to get a nomination now. I mean, between the Linnuan's group in the Shannon the so-called Sock Dems and People for Profit, she has that much on it.
It's a fascinating backstory, isn't it, that Catherine Connolly left the Labour Party in 2006 because she didn't get a nomination to run alongside Michael Dee in Galway West and then took the seat as an independent 10 years later and now wants to run to replace him.
We
keep your texts coming in, loads of them coming in on the presidency. We're going to bring you those after the short break. Now, loads of you texting in on 087 1400 106 about the presidency. Sean, the media nominations for this presidency have become ridiculous when the likes of Jack Chambers at the very beginning of his political career is being mentioned, and you speak of the great impact of the role. Name one thing that has been changed by a president. Jack Chambers, of course, too young still to run at 34 years old, youngest ever finance minister. Another text, we get enough of politicians, I'd propose a non-political runner. Another texter, the importance of the presidency. Since 1939, with very few exceptions, it has been treated as an office to be traded among the political parties to take turns. No one will be put forward if they're not a member of a party. Well, Catherine Connolly is an independent, of course, even though she's got the backing of a couple of political parties. If Mary Lou wins the presidential race, says one texter, I'll sell my house and leave the country. While another taking issue with one of our suggestions, another texter saying, Ivan Yates for president. I can't think of anyone better, a president who lives in the real world. He's going to be so delighted when we're talking to him after 11 o'clock. Now, of course, across the front page of the papers, a lot to do with Trump and the tariffs. We're going to be talking about that in a second. But first, Colm, two of us wearing shorts in the studio. Mm. First time I've ever worn shorts presenting a show, I have to admit, but it is immensely hot out there and people sort of struggling to deal with it over the last 24 hours, just 48 hours even.
I think it's glorious. I mean, I live in Wexford, so we get the best of it all the time. Anyway, yeah, exactly.
Sunny southeast,
exactly.
Strawberries are glowing, and
aren't we hilarious about the weather though? Like we've had, I think, just an exceptionally good summer. Like from May on, the weather has been amazing. And yet, every time there's a drop of rain, people kind of go, oh yeah, it's a terrible summer. Like, we're the most extraordinary people who live in a climate where it can change from one day to the next. And then when it changes, we're kind of surprised by it. But actually, it's just been extraordinary from May on. I'm loving it, I have to say.
Really great. I just really brought you all from counties that are gloriously, you know, Galway, Wicklow, Wexford as well. But Valerie, there's an interesting piece talking today. We always get talking about droughts straight away. But the drought that's been talked about in the Mail is a drought of flakes. Being available for the 99.
Very serious. Colin McGurk in the Mail has this story about how the country is actually running low on Cadbury's flakes for their 99s. Now, they are trying alternatives like Kinder Buenos, Kit Kats, Twirls, and apparently none of them work so well. So, I mean, if this weather continues, we're going to be in a lot of trouble while all these people are slaving in chocolate factories creating our 99s. And in actual fact, in this weather anyway, your 99 is going to melt completely. I mean, we become lunatics. I mean, yesterday in County Wicklow, I live near British Bay, the Gardaí had to close the roads into British Bay, which is absolutely crazy. I mean, if you want to get out there, why not go at 7 in the morning or something? But I mean, lunchtime, early afternoon, you're going in, you're fighting your way in, you're sitting in a car queue in a traffic jam for at least a couple of kilometres. You're fighting with your kids, you're getting hot and bothered, and the kids want out of the car, and then you have to fight your way down to the beach. It's absolutely crazy behaviour. I mean, we do go mad. I mean, probably they won't go as far as Wexford now, Colm, so you're all right.
Thank God.
But they're coming to Wicklow.
Curraghclough is some sort of, you know, haven at the minute.
Well, it's a bit further to go, you know, but I just think it's crazy. I remember previous years like this. I mean, we had a heat wave, particularly remember, I'm old enough to remember 1976, which was an amazing heat wave. And I remember it very well because I spent the entire summer as a patient in the Rotunda, sleeping on a rubber mattress, oof, waiting for the child to arrive. But
oh, Lord, that heat too.
That's how I remember that year very well. But I mean, there are people who are having very unpleasant times in this weather, and we've got to remember that. Also, the people who are working terribly hard. It's a killer for farmers because, for one thing, their animals won't eat during the daytime. So they're trying to force feed them at nighttime, get gallons of water. Apparently, the intake of a cow was about 80 litres a day. And in this weather, it's gone up to 120 litres. I mean, I don't know where they put it, but you know, it is very, very tough for people like that at the moment. And we don't heat. I mean, we go mad when the sun comes out. It is very pleasant, yes. But I think if it wasn't quite so hot, it'd be even more pleasant.
John, politicians often get, you know, during an election campaign, they get caught out with the price of a pint of milk and these sort of questions. We've had the research team doing some very important numbers this morning. What would you say is the average cost of a 99 now?
Well, I said €2.50.
Anyone else care to guess, Colm?
I haven't bought a 99, I would say, in about 20 years. So I haven't a clue, I'm afraid.
I'd say €4.
€4. You're probably closest. €3.50.
€3.50, yeah.
€3.50 for a 99 with a flake. €3 for just the cone.
Can I just say, Sean?
Isn't that insane?
I must be living in a different country to Colm, because we had a lovely period in Galway in maybe late April, May. But unfortunately, we've had a lot of rain since. So we really welcome this weather. Now, Galway's great in any weather. But it's one of the things I've noticed since I started coming to Dublin is the different weather patterns between the east and the west of the country. Often I'd be leaving Dublin to head home on a Thursday afternoon and I'd be leaving a nice, mild, somewhat warm, sunny day and I'd be heading west. And usually when I get around that lone, I see grey clouds and it's starting to rain. No, it doesn't make the journey any less pleasurable. I always like getting home. As I said, Galway's great in any weather. But we certainly don't enjoy the extended periods of dry weather in Galway that it appeared to do in Dublin.
Great advertisement for the Galway Tourism Board there.
Well, it's a great place.
It was a wonderful recovery from like, oh no, we're having miserable weather over there. But it's great anywhere. It's fantastic anywhere. It's fabulous.
If you want Shop fun, Street in the rain, if you want lovely fun for the next 3 weeks, Galway's your place. We have 2 weeks of the Galway Arts Festival. We have a week of the Galway Races. There's probably lots more of the Galway Film Flas on at the moment. So, and Sawtill is perfect
rust,
in this
you
weather. But so, well, you won't. There's plenty of shelter too. But definitely Galway is the place to be. But no, it is interesting. And it is something that I've noticed, as I said, since having to come to Dublin on a regular basis. Unfortunately, we get more rain.
Yeah. Well, being from the sunny southeast, we don't. And actually, on your point of getting out early, my mother has just sent me a lovely pic from Tremor Beach, which is nice and calm for the morning and will be absolutely mental today if they're going out. Let us know what you're doing to keep cool in this weather. One texter in saying, wear light natural fibre clothing, drink lots of water, stop trying to do the same things as usual, keep your house cool and calm down. Another texter saying, great 99 in O'Driscoll's Ballinlock Road in Cork, 2.90 with a sauce or topping plus the flake. Telling you, great value in Cork there. 2.90, not so bad. Speaking of not great value though, and turning up the temperatures, Donald Trump over the last few days, John, has really put the pressure on the government here, but Europe in general, this threat of a 30% tariff, and it's all across the papers, what this is going to do to the budget, which was already not going to have a cost of living package in it. I never know quite how seriously to take these threats from Donald Trump, because he's made them before and rode back. Like, do you think, is this a negotiating position or is this where he's going to go?
Well, one can't say. You're right. I mean, the uncertainty he's causing is very difficult to deal with. I mean, my sense of it was that the European Commission had got somewhat optimistic in recent weeks that a deal would be done. And I think our own government was of the same stance. And there seemed to be a lot of dialogue and it seemed to be making progress. But then we get this like bombshell that this 30% increase will be imposed from the 1st of August. And again, Cullum and I were just talking earlier on, one of the articles in today's paper in the Sunday Business Post says that one of the outcomes Trump wants is for companies to relocate to America. And that if decisions aren't made around that, that the tariffs will be imposed. And again, that's not a decision for national governments, or it's not a decision for the European Commission. So it's very uncertain. And, you know, it's causing a lot of concern in terms of what the real impact will be on the exchequer, and particularly if the tariffs are implemented.
What are you hearing from Jack Chambers in particular in the party internally? Because obviously there's all sorts of demands, requests ahead of the budget, the cost of living crisis. I know we were joking about the cost of a 99, but it's sort of wider reflected in 4.6% rise in the cost of food over the last year, according to the CPI. Like, people are still struggling, and yet the government very much saying, or seems to be saying, sorry lads, not this year.
Well, I don't know that we're saying sorry lads, not this year. We are saying that the same type of once-off measures that occurred over the past 2 years won't be occurring this year. I think the government are still very aware that the cost of living is increasing on people. And we want to make sure that there are targeted measures to ensure that those who face the greatest challenge in that, you know, don't succumb to that challenge. And that the budget, while we won't have cost of living package, I think there should be measures to make sure that those in the lower income margins, the lower income thresholds are supported.
Mm. Barry, what do you think of that? Because there's a lot of people around the country who are still struggling. And I think a lot of people would say more targeted, maybe that's a good idea if there is a smaller pot. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's appalling to think that the government isn't offering a cost of living package, because every week almost we're hearing about all these increases. I mean, butter is up by about a euro. All the basics. I mean, we're not talking about the caviar and the six pack of wine or anything like that. We're talking about bread, butter, milk, the simplest of things, and families trying to feed their kids. So if the government doesn't have a cost of living package this year, I mean, they can nearly say goodbye to the presidency on that one alone. Because when things weren't so bad, even a couple of years ago, there were subsidies for electricity, for energy. And, you know, you didn't have to be a very poor household to be glad to avail of that. So, you know, it's very, very essential. And instead of that, we're told, no, 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 we won't be giving you a cost of living package. Well, I mean, that's one government down the tubes if they carry that on. I think the government should be far more aware of what is facing the most vulnerable people in society and look at what their costs are like. Yes, there are some people who don't need it, and there are people who win the lotto, of course, but there are people who need it very badly and to whom it makes a difference being able to put a decent meal on the table for their kids, to pay for all the school things, their uniforms, all the usual things. And, you know, if a government can't look after that, then what are they doing?
John?
Yeah, I think that the government are conscious of that and are aware of that. The uncertainty in all this, as we started the discussion about, is the impact of the what could potentially be a trade war and the impact that'll have on Irish jobs and the impact on the exchequer. And we have to be cautious around that. You know, previous times we might have ignored such things and we saw how that developed and how that left us. The government are very conscious of the cost of living. And some of the things that Valerie has mentioned there in terms of return to schools cost. I mean, over the past number of years, we've managed to get free school books to all children now up to junior cert, I think, and maybe increasing to leaving cert this year. And we're also giving school meals. We're very conscious of it. What the government have only said is that there will be no package of once-off measures. But I think it's fair to say that across government, they are talking about targeted measures to make sure that we protect those who are most at risk from increases in cost of living.
But you're not. I mean, you turn around and...
No, there's no package.
What do you think about the bicycle shed you built in the zone?
I mean, that shouldn't have cost what it did, but it did.
Yeah, but that means you're not being aware and you're not being careful.
I think we can't bring everything into the debate. We're talking about
That's not everything. That's We're talking about the exchequer.
We're talking about the exchequer. We're talking about the uncertainty that is being caused by the potential of a trade war between Europe and America and the impact that will have on the exchequer. And we're being cautious about saying we're not sure of that impact yet. And we must be sure of it before we can take decisions with money we don't have.
Well,
so I think we need to be very careful with it. And I think the government are very conscious of the cost of living.
Conum?
I mean, it's interesting. I actually do think that the potential trade war is giving the government perhaps a welcome off-ramp from the once-off measures. There's no doubt about the fact that particularly, I think, when energy prices went where they went, we saw a massive spike in household bills, like just a catastrophic spike in household bills where those were required and necessary. But in the run-up to the last election, the kind of largesse around some of the one-off measures was, I think, a little bit difficult to defend. So for the government to have an off-ramp and a reason for cutting those kind of one-off measures is probably politically helpful and useful. It's one of the only things that could be... It could be one of the only things that's useful in the current context. And yes, of course it's prudent, but it would have been prudent before the last general election. Well, and prudence wasn't in
well, we weren't aware of the outcome of the American election.
Insignificant supply. It wasn't insignificant supply at that stage.
We weren't aware of the outcome.
But I do think that the real measure of this will be the October budget. I mean, we're hearing a lot about targeted measures. We need to see what those targeted measures will be. Mm-hmm. If that happens...
And we won't see them till the budget.
I think the government will have a lot more credibility, but those measures need to be properly targeted. Mm. And the challenge is going to be, you know, moving away from kind of a universal approach to throwing money at the electorate, as opposed to dealing with the challenges that people are facing and where people are struggling. I do think it's completely valid to talk about the provision of free school books. I mean, that was something that should have happened 20 years ago, you know, when we had the money to do it, and not mine. Now, it's frankly indefensible that in 2025, children's education or experience of education is still largely dependent upon how much money their parents have, you know, because of all of the additional costs that are very often faced within the education system, particularly for so-called extracurricular activities, etc. So anything that could be done around that is really, really welcome. But Valerie's right when you're looking at the cost of living. And there's another piece in the Mail on Sunday talking about some of the increases that we've seen, like potatoes up 42% in the last 3 years. The price of beef has gone up 50% in the last 8 months. So the cost of living issues that people are facing are still massive. Where we started from this on Trump, I mean, it's now gotten to the point, I think, where the only certainty is uncertainty. Mm. And I do think we're beginning to see even now the markets stop reacting to Trump's latest missive, because who knows what any of it means? Yeah. I mean, is this another tackle? Is Trump going to change it again? Yeah. Will the 1st of August come and suddenly it'll be... Yeah. I mean, it's utter nonsense. And yeah, and you made reference to that piece about Trump saying how it could be avoided. He said there will be no tariffs if the European Union or companies within the EU decide to build or manufacture product within the United States. I mean, does he understand that the European Union doesn't actually build factories and manufacture product? It's all nonsense. And I think what we're now beginning to... I think what people are going to have to get to grips with is the United States is in no way a reliable partner,
yeah,
either from a political or a trade perspective. And we need to very swiftly orientate away from looking to a solution. We need to orientate away from thinking that the solution will come from Trump deciding to act reasonably. The next 3.5 years, excuse my language, are going to be an utter shit show. And that's not going to change. And there can be nothing dependable about it. That's too long to wait it out. The EU and Ireland and others need to orientate away and develop new relationships and accept the fact that the trade relationship with the US is going to be appalling for the next number of years, and we need to prepare for
it. It is, Colin, but at the same time, I think, you know, there's no point in panicking about this tariff, because, as you said, we don't know what Trump is going to do. Ursula von der Leyen is talking about, you know, she's willing to negotiate with Trump. Brussels is willing to negotiate with the administration. We know that. And he keeps changing dates and so on. But also some of the other stuff, like relocating American firms from Ireland to the United States. You can't do that overnight.
He doesn't say American firms, by the way.
He says European companies.
Well, yes. But, you know, to
he
do that.
He says European company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even, you know, so
but also, I mean, you now look that Trump is trying to use tariffs as a way of influencing policy decisions.
Yeah.
It, like,
you know, he's going to lump more tariffs on Brazil because of the prosecution of Bolsonaro. Like, there was a suggestion that she told the UK unless they cut down on DEI initiatives within the UK, tariffs would increase. He's now trying to use, I mean, I'd love to see Nigel Farage's response to that from the point of view of taking back control. He now wants to use tariffs and trade mechanisms to try to influence policy decisions taken by sovereign governments.
He's trying to control it all and sort of strongman. Yeah. Loads of people getting in touch with this 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp. Ireland is a big enough social welfare state, says one. It doesn't need yet another cost of living freebie. I'm blue in the face listening about looking after the most vulnerable in society. What about the hardworking middle income families who are stretched to the limit? Another texter in, why aren't the government targeting supermarkets? Tesco made $2 billion in profit last year. Cost of living crisis, explain this. Another message, Valerie is correct. The government are out of touch with reality and ordinary people are struggling to live. And the opposite text, Valerie, we have had huge tax receipts and nothing to show for it because Valerie and co want to give it away to people who don't need it. Everything should be income assessed. So you're getting both barrels from both sides. We're going to be, keep your text coming in on that 087-1400-106. After the break, we're going to be talking about dull grades as it comes to the end of the term and the summer holidays for them. And also playing music to cows. Now, this week is the last week of the Dáil before their summer recess. And Colm, grades have been given out in the Sunday Independent with the Jim O'Callaghan, the Justice Minister, being the top performer.
Yeah, it's that time of year again when there are acres of newsprint to fill. So we get the grading of ministers. Yeah, absolutely. Jim O'Callaghan comes out top on 8 out of 10. He's the highest scoring. Micheál Martin on 7 out of 10, along with Pascal Donoghue. Patrick O'Donovan on 7 out of 10 as well, Jennifer Carol McNeil, and yeah, those are all the and Jack Chambers, all with 7 out of 10. So 7 or 8 seems to be the highest scores. I mean, some of the interesting ones they give, I was surprised actually that Ivana Bacic got 4 out of 10 given the outcome in the last general election, what all of that meant. You would have thought she'd be a bit more buoyed than that. But I suppose what Gabby is writing about in this, who's done the piece, is performance in the Dáil since the Dáil.
Yeah, I would have thought, in fairness, that Ivana Bacic would have been higher. She's been quite. Yeah. I thought she'd been decent.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And seems to be having an impact on Labour. Seemed to be having some sort of recovery after a long time in the doldrums. So I was surprised by that. Dara Cailleary, 4 out of 10. I don't think Dara will be particularly happy with that, but I think what we're seeing here is that there's it's interesting that there are a few ministers, and they're the ones who are getting these scores, who seem to be getting the most public face time, right? Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of ministers, and Dara, I think, would be one of them. He's a very capable person and a very capable minister, but he's quite invisible at the moment, maybe because the portfolio isn't up there. I mean, Patrick O'Donovan with 7 out of 10 is interesting. I mean, maybe I don't think he's done anything in his role at this stage that would suggest that he's performing brilliantly, but he hasn't done anything that suggests he's performing terribly.
Is it because of the Arts Council stuff? Is it that he, you know, handled that in a sort of hard government line way or what? Because like that,
handled it how? I mean, that hasn't even been got to grips with yet. I mean, he was a new minister, so he couldn't be made responsible for it, perhaps. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. Some of these things are fairly arbitrary. I guess maybe it seems to me that lots of the scores seem to be as much about who's out there and who's in the public sphere or who's getting media time more than it is about actual performance. And I think that really reflects the fact that this Oireachtas took a very long time to get up and running, given that we didn't have committees, given that none of that was happening for a very long time indeed. Actually, not an awful lot to score people. Yeah.
Like, John, your party sort of on both ends. You have Jim O'Callaghan on the one side getting the top grade. I think Dara O'Brien got the lowest in climate at 3 out of 10. And he's been pretty anonymous since leaving housing, hasn't he?
I wouldn't agree with that. I mean, I actually think Dara has been very proactive, particularly in the area of transport, because he's also the Minister for Transport. I've had numerous meetings with Dara about issues relative to transport in my own constituency. And I know that one of the things that he's very eager to do is get quicker decisions around transport infrastructure. And a lot of work has gone into that. Also, relation to Dara, I had a lot of interaction with Dara Cailleary. He's the Minister for the Gaeltacht, and I think he's taken a number of measures that mightn't go noticed by the wider media, but will have a big impact on Gaeltacht communities. things like the town and village renewal scheme. So he's encouraged every local authority, or he's advised every local authority with a Gaeltacht area, that they must bring forward one scheme from a Gaeltacht village in their town. Same for the Clare. So that's kind of innovative thinking and stuff that would hopefully revitalise the Gaeltacht. I don't think he's getting credit for that, that he deserves.
Yeah, there's maybe a few that haven't been out there in the media and getting as much. How have you found your first term as a TD? Because it's been a weird one, in that you had the speaking times row, committees were very late in being formed.
And we had Stormy Own
as well.
Very big impact on my own constituency.
But generally, like being a TD.
Yeah, I found it very different to the routine of, I was a school teacher myself, and it's very different. And I suppose one of the things I did find in coming to Dublin initially, prior to the committees being established, was the amount of time I spent in my own office dealing with constituency issues and things like that. So it has been, I found it quite challenging to start, to be frank. But I find since Easter now, we have had consecutive weeks where the doll has been sitting and we're following a particular routine. So I feel I'm becoming more familiar with that, and that helps.
I did kind of have to laugh, I suppose, at a couple of the new TDs saying to me, oh yeah, we're finally getting to the grips of it, right before the Oireachtas committee started, and your workload doubles effectively.
Yeah, but I suppose that's why we're there. Like, the committees are really important. I find the committee meetings we've had so far to be really good, because we get direct involvement with either senior department officials or with ministers, and we can kind of question them at length on policy and that kind of stuff. So I found the committees to be very beneficial and helpful. I was appointed in issues three committees. I'm participating on a fourth one as well. So I'm enjoying that role.
Mm, big workload.
Workload, yeah. But I mean, things I'd like, I'm interested in. I want to participate in the public policy round.
Valerie, one more story we're going to cover, because it's down in Wicklow, of course, down in your area of the world. And Ian Begley, intrepid reporter for the Indo and Fairner, or the Times rather, formerly of the Indo, has been playing music to cows.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great story. He went down to Joe Hayden's farm. Now, Joe has got 230 Bailey's ladies, as he calls them. And these are the cows, some of the cows anyway, that provide milk for Bailey's liqueur. So it's very special milk. And the cows have to be very, very relaxed, because apparently if they are, that adds to their shelf life. And these particular cows, they like
shelf
music.
Shelf life of the cows or of the cream?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I suppose it's the same thing, isn't it? Poor things. But it's the shelf life of the cream and the milk and so on that's made, and probably the Baileys. But apparently they really like music, and it's very, very good for them. So what he did was, Ian went down and he brought a saxophone. Now, I don't think he's great on the saxophone, because apparently when he bought the instrument, his neighbours went out the very same day and bought noise-cancelling headphones. So that's not a good start. But he went out and he played the music for the cows. And cows, as you know, they're very friendly animals. I mean, it's actually very sad that we kill them and eat them. And they were gathering around for the music and trying to come close to him and everything. And they had a lovely day. And this is really very good for the cows and very good for the Baileys. And he said he doesn't know whether or not the following morning they produced fresh or sour milk or whatever. But he certainly enjoyed it anyway. And about 200 million litres of fresh Irish milk are required to produce the cream that's used in Baileys. That's a little nugget of information.
I did find it hilarious. He played a Taste of Baker Street, followed by a gritty rendition of the Pink Panther theme to these cows. But it's interesting that the farmer, Mr. Hayden, said that he discovered the cows have particular tastes in music. They use Spotify for them, and they have about four playlists. This morning they were listening to Enigma, Springsteen, Sinead O'Connor and Coldplay. So there you go. That's what's being used.
Very cultured
cows. Very cultured cows down in Wicklow altogether. Listen, my thanks to newspaper panel, Colin O'Gorman, Valerie Cox and John Connolly. Thanks a million for all coming in on this very sunny Sunday and having a chat through all of the papers.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.